Well, we're talking today about King Saul and Prince Jonathan. Well, and David's in there in the mix as well, and don't misunderstand me, he's a major part of this. But I want to focus in on a few things, and David kind of comes in and ends up being almost a secondary character in this little part here. Because Saul and Jonathan are kind of the biggies. So you've got King Saul. You remember Saul was a tall man. He was well-loved by the people. He just had this real problem when it came to God. He would not follow God. He was stubborn when it came to God. So he would, anything God called him to, he would almost do it or not quite do it or not at all, and he just wouldn't go God's way. Jonathan, on the other hand, was a man of faith. That guy would follow God anywhere. In fact, Jonathan is one of the few people in Scripture that just shines the whole time. Jonathan is a shining example of faith and commitment. And this passage today is really just showing us the difference between those two people. And more than that, it's a call on our hearts to be more like Jonathan. And so I want to take a look at this. And the first part here is verse 55 to the end of the chapter. And let me give you an idea of what's going on. Goliath, perhaps the single greatest threat that Israel had faced up to this point, I mean like a single person as a threat to Israel up until this point, is a giant. Israel goes to meet the Philistines, and Goliath steps forward and he says, "Hey, I'm big, let's fight." Well, he doesn't say it quite like that. But he says, "Let's fight, and anyone who fights me, if they win, well, we'll be your servants, but if I win, you'll be our servants," which is kind of unfair, right? When a 9 1/2 tall guy comes out dressed in armor and says, "Hey, let's fight, do you think you can beat me?" Well, the answer is no, you can't. And then David comes forward and he says, "But I see what God is up to here. I see what God is accomplishing. I'm on board with this. This is not me. This is God at work." And so David goes out and defeats the Philistine. And Saul is sitting there thinking, who really is this guy, this David that's running out there? So that's where we're at. And now suddenly we come to the point where David is standing before Saul, King Saul, and he's holding Goliath's head. Can we all get together on the same page on this? That's gross. Do we recognize that? Everyone except for Brock. Most of us are on the same page. It's gross. We have to understand that. The second thing we need to recognize is that's a big head. Right? That's a big head he's carrying. He's carrying a suitcase. And so you've got David that's just defeated Goliath. And out of an act of faith, a movement of God has just happened, and this giant has just come down. Defeated by David. Defeated by God through David. And so we come to this passage. Now, here's the thing, is a lot of times we think of this passage, if you're familiar with it, David and Jonathan, and we start thinking it's all about just a really good friendship and we need to be good friends and so forth, but it's far more than that. This passage is about this. It's about humility. Humility before God and submission to God, saying, "God, you are God and I will go with your way." That's what this passage is about. And Saul, King Saul, was saying, "No, I'm not really on board with that." And Jonathan was saying, "I am on board with that." So that's what we want to see with this. And we see a love that flows out of that humility and the submission to God, and a faith that says, "God is greater, and I'll go along with his plan." So here's what's going on. We get this verse 55. It says, "As soon as Saul saw David go out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, 'Abner, whose son is this youth?'" Now that's a great question. Whose son is this youth? If you know the story, and maybe this story is very new to you, but if you know the story, just a short while before, David and Saul met. They knew each other. In fact, David was actually somebody who was involved in Saul's life. Saul had this problem. An evil spirit would come and bother him, and then he brought in David, who was a musician. He'd play an instrument, and then Saul would feel better. And they knew each other for a while now. So David would show up every time Saul was having trouble. David was also a shepherd, and the Bible tells us he was kind of going back and forth between Saul and the shepherding. And so for Saul to turn around and say, "Whose son is this?" it shows us something about Saul. He wasn't really paying attention. David was kind of he was a help, but he was really a, a nobody to Saul. David had been in his court. He would help him out. He was actually even his armor bearer. And the Bible tells us that Saul loved David, but he wasn't really paying attention. David, whose son are you? That's quite a question, and it shows us a lot about Saul's heart towards David. But it's also an important question because of the reward. See, David had gone out to defeat Goliath, and there was a reward promised. There was a reward such as great riches. Your family is going to be free from taxes, so he kind of had to know who the family was. He also, the part of the reward was whoever defeated Goliath got to marry Saul's daughter. So it's kind of important to know, whose family am I connecting myself up with here? There were riches. There was quite the status boost coming David's way. And Saul comes to this question of, I'm aligning myself with this guy. Is this guy an asset to me? Or is he a problem? And you start to pick this up, especially when you see Jonathan's response. He's looking at David like, who is this guy? And why would I want to be, or do I really want to be aligned with him? I think this is an important question. Whose son are you? It's a really important question because it's a question that we should be asking ourselves. Whose son am I? Whose daughter am I? Who is my connection? Because oftentimes where we come from, not just our parents, but where we come from, our background and everything, helps to shape us and define us and set us on a direction for good or for ill. The things that we have been pointed, the directions we have been pointed in, that sends us somewhere. And this question of whose son are we, it talks about who are we? What is our very nature? What are we like? And I think the question then is applied to Jesus. Whose son is Jesus? You know, you jump ahead 1,000 years and Jesus is walking along. And, you know, the church is named Truth Community Church because Jesus is the truth, right? It's not because we've got it figured out. It's because Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so we come to that question of Jesus. Who is Jesus? Whose son is he? Jesus was raised by a carpenter. And if he was raised by a carpenter, he may have some wise things to say to us. He may have some direction and some encouragement to us. But Jesus claimed to be more than that. He claimed to be the Son of God. And if he's the Son of God, the question of whose son is this really affects our life, doesn't it? If Jesus really is the Son of God, that should shape everything about us and everything that we do and everything about our direction, all that we are. Should it not? Whose son is this David? Whose son is this Jesus? But back to Saul. I want to jump over to Jesus every now and then, but let's come back to Saul. I think about Saul when it comes to David, and he goes from kind of uninterested. David's in his court, play the instrument for me, be my armor bearer, I like this guy, but he's really uninterested. He's not even paying attention to where he comes from, really. He goes from uninterested and unconcerned with David to curious. Who is this guy? But you jump down a few verses into chapter 18 and we read this. Verse 7, and the women saying to one another as they celebrated, Saul has struck down his thousands and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry. And this saying displeased him. He said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s. To me they have ascribed thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. He goes from uninterested to curious, to suspicious. Saul has a bit of a problem, doesn't he? A power problem. I want control. And David is either an asset to me or a threat to me. And he thinks, oh, he's an asset. And then, wait a second, I think he's a threat. So then back to Jesus. How do we respond to Jesus when we see him? Whose son are you? And it really depends on our heart. Is our heart humble and submissive to God that we see Jesus and we say, yeah, I want this guy? Or are we caught up in protecting our own kingdom? You know that's why David was a threat, right? Saul looked at him and said, he's a threat to my kingdom. I could lose what I have. And that's a problem for Saul. What about with Jesus, though, when we come before him? Are we caught up in protecting our own kingdom in our lives, or are we caught up in pursuing the things that Jesus is about? Is it truly about me, or is it about Jesus? If it's about me, will I truly be able to recognize God's anointed when he stands before me? Will I recognize who Jesus is and what he's about? or will I not be able to give up my kingdom to him? So here's the question then for us. We ask that question, whose son are we? Right? Whose son is David? Whose son is Jesus? Whose son are we? Who are we aligning ourselves? Who are we running to? Now come back to Saul versus Jonathan. This passage is really a comparison between the two. Saul, the man who could not submit to God, and Jonathan, who was one of the few people in the Bible who's consistently shown to be a man of faith. And we see the difference between these two, and Saul gets stubborn. David's a threat. But Jonathan, on the other hand, looks at David, and this is what we see in verse 1 of chapter 18. As soon as David had finished speaking to Saul, listen to this, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. We have a picture of an incredible friendship between these two. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen, you've never seen actual pictures of David and Jonathan, right? No, okay. But have you ever seen a painting? Have you ever seen a drawing of it? Maybe if you've grown up in the church and you've been in Sunday school, you've seen pictures of the two of them, right? And most of the time you see David, who was a young man, maybe he was about 17, we're not really sure, and Jonathan, a young man, maybe he was the same age, that kind of thing. Do you know that the two of them weren't the same age? I want to get this kind of, so you can get kind of the image. Do you know how much of a difference there was between them? Let me put it this way. Jonathan, even though David was probably about 17, Jonathan could have been a grandpa by this point. There was at the very, very, very minimum, and this is stretching it, very minimum, 20 years between the two. More likely, there was about 27 years. So David, 17-ish, Jonathan then would be about 44. And I point this out for a few reasons, right? And I think it's important to us to see that the connection was not based on just mutual interest, just not just a peer. You know, I think that's important because when we look around this room, a lot of us, we think, okay, we're not connected because of just mutual interests. We're not connected because we're all the same age. We're not connected because we just like the same things or do the same things. There's something deeper that connects us, is there not? It's faith in Jesus Christ. It's a relationship with Jesus Christ. I don't know if you've been a Christian for a while, if you've ever been out and just kind of met somebody for the first time and you find out that they share your faith, have you noticed there's a strong connection instantly between you? There's a reason for it, because that connection is a mutual faith, and it runs far deeper than anything else. It goes far deeper than age, status, race. It goes far deeper than interest. It goes farther deeper than employment. It goes far deeper than all these things. It's a connection in Jesus Christ. Jonathan looks over at David, and he sees something beautiful in him. He sees a similar faith. If you look back on Jonathan, Jonathan was a man of faith, a deep man of faith. He would go and step forward and follow the Lord into absurd situations, trusting the Lord, following the Lord. And he sees in David the same kind of thing. Hey, this young 17-year-old goes up and faces a 9.5-foot-tall giant out of faith for God. This is somebody I can connect with. They were knit together around their mutual faith. A kindred man of faith in a kingdom full of people who would not trust God. And then you come to verse 2 and we read this. And Saul took him, that's David, that day and would not let him return to his father's house. This is before Saul saw him as a threat. Saul sees an asset, somebody who can benefit him or someone who is a threat. But Jonathan, on the other hand, sees something more. Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David and his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. That's an odd thing, isn't it? Have you ever done that to a friend? You know, you're really close. Well, let me give you my shirt and let me give you, oh, here's my shoes. Have you? Nobody? Well, clearly you don't like your friends enough. No, but that's an unusual thing, and it's not something we do too often here. I don't want to rule it out, but it's not something we do too often. Jonathan looked at David, and he sees somebody, a kindred man of faith, somebody who has the same faith that he holds to. And you come to this point where you realize his humility and submission to God. Now, let's consider what Jonathan had to lose. David was the new golden boy of the nation. Just in that moment. See, Jonathan had been that. He had been that man of faith, that great warrior. He was the prince of Israel. Everybody knew him. Everybody knew how great of a warrior he was and all these types of things. He was gearing up to be the king. And then David comes along and in a matter of minutes takes down the single greatest threat to Israel. Have you ever met someone who's greater than you? You see they're stronger than you, or they're smarter than you, or they're this or that, or they're just better at what you do. Maybe you both do the same kind of thing, but they're just way better at you, at it than you. Do you see them as a threat? I know a lot of us have felt that kind of thing. We see somebody who does whatever we do better than we do it, and we get caught up in jealousy. We get caught up in this selfish ambition, this resentment that grows. And Jonathan had a great reason to be threatened by David's rise to fame and rise to power. And yet he turns around and he says, let me give you my honor. Take my cloak so everyone who sees you recognizes that you are prince approved. Take my sword, because it's going to be a decent sword, right? He's not just carrying a hunk of metal around. He's carrying a well-made sword, and he hands it off to David. He says, take my bow. He says, take all of this, and you will walk around with the prince's stamp of approval on you wherever you go. Is that what a man does who's resenting? Is that what a man does who is jealous? Not at all. Now, why is it that Jonathan did not resent David? It comes out later on that Jonathan begins to see that David will be the future king. His kingdom would be lost to David. He sees that, and you know what he does? He continues to love and support his friend. He continues to encourage him and push him in that direction. Why is that? It's because Jonathan's heart was focused on what God wanted. God's goals, God's plans. He was not caught up in his own. That's humility. God's way, God's goals, and God's plans, not mine. At the root of this is faith. A faith in God's way that leads us to love for God. It says, I want God's way no matter what. And it leads us to a love for one another. Because he says, I want God's way for each of us. Now, how do we react for to one another? Well, think about that. When there are successes and great successes in the lives of those around us, what do we do? What do we do? Do we see them and cheer and are we thrilled because we see what God is up to in the lives of other people? When good things happen, what is our response to that kind of thing? Because as we begin to see God at work in the lives of other people, we become all about God's purposes and our love for one another grows. What are we about when it comes to God's purposes? How willing are we to give up our way for God's way? Let me jump ahead to Jesus, because 1,000 years later, Jesus is there, and God sent Jesus to this earth, his son to earth, to die. That was what he was here for, to come to this earth, live a perfect life, take our sin and our wrongdoings on his shoulders, and die on the cross. That's not a small thing. And Jesus, even though he's the Son of God, he comes to a point before the cross and he's struggling with it. He's afraid. He's fearing it. He's dealing with the agony of the thought of the suffering that is to come. And do you remember, if you know the passage, what he says to his Father? He says, not my will, not what I want, but God's will be done. Isn't that incredible? Jonathan gives up what he could have for what God is up to, and it points ahead to Jesus doing the exact same thing. Jonathan saw God at work, God's favor, God's success, and you don't stand against that without standing against God. Jonathan was saying, I want to join him. If God is doing something wonderful, join him. So what do we do when we see God at work? How do we respond as people of faith? With humility and with submission to God and his way? Or just look for personal benefit and then be suspicious, be resentful? I want to come back, though, to this question that I asked right at the beginning. And I'm not preaching long today because I want to give our friends from Youth for Christ the chance to be able to share a little bit about their ministry. But I want us to turn, just as we close, to 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 14. 1 Peter is right near the end of the Bible. First Peter chapter 1, verse 14. And I love this passage because one of my favorite illustrations, and God describes our relationship with him in a number of different ways. One of my favorite ones is the picture of family. He says this in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 14. He says this, "As obedient children, do not be conformed to the passions of your former ignorance. Don't get caught up in the things you used to be about." He says, "But as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Since it is written, 'You shall be holy, for I am holy.' And if you call on him as Father, who judges impartially according to each one's deeds, conduct yourselves with fear throughout the time of your exile." One of the things about God is he says, "I'm Father." That's the relationship I have with you. And he calls us into family with him. And if we are family with him, he starts to define us. He starts to shape us, and he starts to mold us as a father oftentimes does, as a parent oftentimes does. And so we ask that question, whose son are you? Whose daughter are you? And I ask it in two different ways. If you're standing there thinking, you know, I've never stepped into God's family, it's something that you don't just step into. It's something he pulls you into. If you've never been pulled into the family of God by God, welcomed in, then I invite you today to come to know him as your Lord and Savior. It's a matter of faith. It's not a matter of action. We don't work our way in, do enough good stuff. It's a matter of coming to him in faith and saying, "I believe. I trust you are enough. I trust Jesus died on the cross to wipe away my sins, and that's enough." So that's enough. And he welcomes us into his family. But if you have been welcomed into the family as well, Peter puts it this way, if you call on God as Father, act like his children. Live like his children. Be about his goals and his dreams and his purposes. Don't get caught up in being King Saul. Be Prince Jonathan, a man who said, "Lord, your will, not my own." Why don't I close with us in prayer as we continue to worship and hear a little bit of the ministry going on with Youth for Christ. Lord, I just thank you for your goodness. I thank you for your kindness. I thank you for your mercy. And I thank you for your purpose and your will and what you are up to in this world. And I pray that you would help us to be up to be on board with what you're up to go your way. I pray that you would open our eyes up to this joy of being in your family, of being knit together around a mutual faith and love for Jesus Christ. In your precious name, amen.